Now, have you ever wondered what life was like for your parents, your grandparents, or even your great-grandparents when they were young? Imagine what it would be like to come across old letters that they had written to one another from opposite ends of the world. That's exactly what happened to Melbourne woman Sue Corse about 40 years ago. The letters she found were written in German between her parents, who had moved to Australia when she was just a child, and her grandparents, who still lived in Vienna in Austria, a city which generations of her wealthy Jewish family had called home. That was until the time leading up to the Nazi invasion of the city ahead of World War II. Well, now aged in her mid-80s, Sue Corse has taken all those letters and gathered many other family stories and written a book about it. It's called Lost Letters from Vienna.
Well, the letters were found, as I say, in a top cupboard in a suitcase. After my mother died, I was cleaning out. And they were just amazing letters because my family seemed to have a real talent for letter writing. And they were mainly on very thin typewritten paper. And because you paid for every little bit you wrote it had to be very light. Yeah. And what I found with them was the beginning of when my parents left Vienna with me in 1938, my grandparents wrote to them. And they also then decided to make a family chronicle. Like, so as people escaped, they'd write to my grandparents and then they would make this a sort of a newsletter and send it back to my parents. And, well, they were all in German, so I can read German, but I'm pretty slow at it.
Yeah.
And so I had to get a lot of help from family all over the world who helped me. And then I was in a U3A class in German in Banyul, and they helped me too. It took quite a few years to actually get them all translated. And then I thought, oh, there's so much in them that I'd love to write about them, you know, from their life in Vienna and the deteriorating conditions, how they could no longer sit on a park bench or catch public transport, and there were always people knocking on their door and they didn't know who it was, and they'd open it, and once my grandmother had a big pearl necklace, and the Nazis came to the door and they said, "We want you to give us some jewelry." So she took off her necklace, and they said, "They said, do you think we're stupid? These are far too big to be genuine pearls," and they just threw it back at them.
Oh.
And they were genuine pearls.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Your family was wealthy, weren't they?
Yeah, yes. Really all my family were wealthy, yes. And that helped them a lot to get out of Vienna, yeah.
You mentioned that you found the letters your mother brought the letters with her in 1969 when she came to live with you, and when she passed away, you held on to them, but you didn't actually look at them for a very long time, did you?
No, I didn't. No, there were other things that were going on. I had four children and a lot of other things going on in my life, so I didn't look at them till much later. Yeah.
And did it feel like a treasure trove of information? How important do you believe it is that families record their stories?
I think it's, well, look, it's just so important because otherwise the whole family is lost. You know, they don't know what their past was like. And that's so important. Yeah. I was just talking to a doctor of mine, and she said, "Look, I had a German father and a Yugoslav mother, and they never talked about it, any of it. And I don't know who any of my family will." With us, we kept in contact, even though the various branches of my family went to Canada or stayed in Czechoslovakia or went to the US and we came to Australia, we kept in touch with one another. And when I went to the US in 1952, they treated me as though I was just, as one of my cousins said, he thought the Queen was coming because they treated me so well. And I just got to know everyone. And I also got manuscripts from them that they had written about their life stories to add to their letters, although at that time I didn't know about the letters, but they'd written about their escape and their lives in Vienna and so on.
And And Sue, all of this weaves so beautifully together in the book. How long have you been working on this project?
Well, the original letters were about 2004, this project has fallen through the hoops a couple of times, and it's just amazing now to hold that book and know it's actually been written and it's there. It's been a long, long process.
Sue Corse is my guest here on Nightlife. Laura Chilingirian here with you on ABC Radio. And the book is called Lost Letters from Vienna. And it's a manuscript of the family of Sue Corse throughout the years. And it's interesting because your parents escaped just at the right time from Vienna. They left in 1938 to emigrate to Australia. But The stories that go back and forth in those letters explain exactly how quickly Vienna deteriorated and changed under Nazi rule.
Certainly did, yes.
Was there a particular story that really stood out to you as you were going through the letters and reading through some of the manuscripts as you went through?
Yes, there's one particular one. My mother's uncle, my great uncle, and my two great uncles, they had a company called Bruder Boehm, Brother Boehm Hats, and that company was in around about from the 1860s. But when the emperor was still around, and then when the Austro-Hungarian Empire disintegrated, they were left with just Austria, and they knew then they had to go worldwide or fold up. I think they had about 5,000 employees altogether, so they went worldwide. And then when the Nazis came, they realised that it was lost, that they just had to get out of the country. So what they did was they offered it to their customers. They said, "Would you like this company?" And they said, the customer said, "We couldn't possibly afford that." And they said, no, we're not asking for payment. We're just asking you to use your influence to get us out of the country." And eventually it happened. They went to Czechoslovakia, where they had a branch of the business. And immediately they arrived, they were told, "You can't stay here. The Germans were invading." So they had an ambassador, they knew the ambassador to Belgium, and he got them into Belgium. And from there they started writing letters to all their customers on whom they didn't know the addresses, they had to just try and remember on these little portable typewriters, and said, "Don't send the money you owe us to Vienna, send it to Belgium." Right. But then the Germans invaded Belgium. So they managed to be able to go to England, providing they set up a branch of their business in England in a poorer area, which they did. They started with 6 people ended up with 60. And then the British went into the war, and the police, they had a very friendly policeman, and he said, "All the men are going to be taken to the Isle of Man as enemy aliens." So So they knew they couldn't, they didn't want to do that. And in the back drawer somewhere, they had a visa to the US, which they thought they'd never use because they wanted to stay in England. And one of them had 2 days to leave, find a ship and get to the US. And the others followed eventually. And they just had to get someone else to sell their business there, and they went off to the US.
But yeah, it's sad that they lost their business in the end, isn't it?
Yes, it is, but they were prepared to start time after time, yeah.
It's incredible what you can do, the resilience that people have.
Yes, yeah. They were very highly thought of, the people who ran the Bruderboom family. And that, while my grandfather from the other side of the family was not highly regarded, he had a silk business, but he hadn't always been so good to his employees, and he was taken into prison a couple of times, and his son was sent to a concentration camp. While the Bruderboom had been so wonderful to their employees that they all supported them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm.
Tell me how these letters helped you to reconnect with family members around the globe. You talked about the translating the German. This really did become a bit of an international project, didn't it?
Was the translation itself?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yes, it did, yes. Well, I had people, a cousin in the US, my sister-in-law in England, and people here in Melbourne, especially a lady, Erica Price, in her 80s, she helped me a lot with the translation. She was from Vienna and quite a bit older than me, and she loved doing it too. Yeah.
Do you feel as if you got closer to your ancestors while reading these letters and researching all their lives?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. I mean, some are still alive now, like the ones in Czechoslovakia. Arthur Klimes, he's been of great help. He's very interested in the family, and his own experiences are in the book as well. They eventually escaped from Czechoslovakia and went to Canada. Yeah. And that's a story in itself, and he's written quite a bit about that, and I've put it together.
Mm. You must have spent hours and hours and days reading these stories.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, and putting them together. Yes, yeah.
It's funny, I was telling my producer earlier that reading through the book, I felt like I was engrossed and I was part of the family, like reading about everyone's different lives, about, you know, your grandmother Sophie and about your great-grandmother Clara and her, you know, the way that they went through Paris and tried to get away that way. And it's just really compelling reading about someone else's life. Even though you don't know them, you feel fascinated by what's going to happen next.
Yes, yeah, it certainly is. And the ones who went to Paris and then had to escape, flee through France. My aunt Leonie, she was a very arrogant woman, had lots of money and all the wealth in the world. And then when she had to sleep in haystacks and to make the beds with a pitchfork and had to carry her own luggage, had to find a wheelbarrow to carry her luggage and get rid of most of it. And she ended up as the most lovely, kind woman. Those experiences made her such a different person.
Mm. Sue Corse, you were 4 years old when you moved to Australia, and a couple of years later, your brother Martin was born. And what are your earliest memories of moving to Australia and settling here?
My earliest memories, they were of just having a garden and being able to climb trees and instead of living in a big apartment block as we did in Vienna. And this isn't actually an earliest memory, but I'd just like to tell you this, that my mother became pregnant as soon as she got here, and she didn't tell any of her family. She didn't write to them. And one of the things that happened was, I didn't know anything about this, but my first visit to the US in the 1950s, all my relatives were saying, why didn't she tell us she was pregnant? She just sent a telegram to say that you had a brother. And I didn't know. And then when I got back, I asked her, and she said, I didn't like to tell anyone because my father said it would have been the wrong thing to do to have a child in the present conditions of the world. Yeah.
Yet she brought joy to everyone when she made the announcement.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes. Well, of course. And my grandparents were coming to Australia at that time. It was just they left it too late. Yeah.
You talk about how you were baptised in the Anglican Church as a Christian and that your father converted. How important has religion been to you throughout your life?
It hasn't been important at all to me. He converted only to make it look better, that you know, rather than being Jewish, and none of us have practiced any religion at all. Yeah.
Have you never really felt any feelings about that?
Not really. No, I haven't really been into religion. In fact, I didn't even read about the Jewish religion until I was married. I didn't know anything about it. We never celebrated anything, really. And even in Vienna, we celebrated Christmas and Easter. And although my mother got married in a synagogue. Yeah.
Mm. So what other members of your extended family ended up making the move to Australia? Your mother obviously came to you in her later years, but they ended up in New Zealand, didn't they?
Yes, but the other member of the family was my father's sister and her husband. They came to Melbourne, and they came on Cup Day, actually, and my father picked them up from the ship, and he said, do you know why we've got holiday today? It's a holiday for a horse. And my aunt came out with the Adolf Loos furniture, which was her parents had commissioned Adolf Loos to get as an architect for the furniture when they got married in 1902. And that Adolf Loos furniture was eventually ended up in the National Gallery of Victoria.
Isn't that incredible that those pieces managed to make it here? Yet I know your grandparents pretty much lost everything as they left the country.
Yes, that's right. They lost everything because they left it till very late. And even so, it was up to the Germans to let the crates through with all the belongings, and some got through well. Ours certainly did, and my aunt's did too. Yeah. So on the cover of the book is a picture of one of the Adolf Loos chairs with the email letters on it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a beautiful image, actually. Tell me about how your family has felt about you putting this book together, your kids, your grandkids.
They're all very happy about me doing this. I don't think they've read I've written quite a lot of autobiography things because I belong to an autobiography group and we meet once a month, and so I've written quite a bit. But they were never terribly interested in, but they've been delighted with this book that it's put it all together.
Sue Corse is with me here on Nightlife on ABC Radio. We're talking about her book, Lost Letters from Vienna, and her family moved to Australia back in 1938 and brought Sue over at the age of four. And you proceeded to make a life for yourself in Melbourne. And can you tell me a little about your legacy, the Darebin Parklands, and how all came about?
Well, When we were in Ivanhoe, we lived close to a little park called Rockbear Park, which was completely neglected. It was just grazed by horses and no one really used it. It was full of weeds. And one day I went down with a friend, Anthea Fleming, and we were going to collect tadpoles for the children to put in a container. And here were these bulldozers in the park allegedly clearing the stream, just getting rid of all the trees and vegetation from the creek so that the creek could flow easily, they said. So I was so incensed about that, I went to the council and they had stopped because it was the then Melbourne Metropolitan Board of Works, now it's Melbourne Waters, and they had no permission to go down. And so we then decided we would try and increase the area of parklands to include another 33 hectares on the opposite side of the Darabin Creek, which was privately owned industrial land and had been a quarry and now was being used as a tip. There was very little vegetation. There were some mulberry trees and so on. So we lobbied state, federal, and local governments to try and fund this. It took about 5 years, and it was Sir Rupert Hamer who helped a lot with that. And when we took him down to the park or the protected park, and we'd had a tour. And we had to try and find people to have family picnics in different parks to make it look as though it was used, even though it wasn't. No one knew about it in those days. And so he made the final offer of a dollar-to-dollar grant with the then Northcote Council to buy the remaining land and became our patron. Yeah. And so, but then that was just the land being bought, and he had made a grant to remove some of the noxious weeds. But we had to get together and plant and do areas of weeding as well. And I didn't know anything about noxious weeds, but we had to form a committee, and they put me in charge of the.
You had to learn pretty
weeds.
Quickly, yeah.
Yeah, they said. I said I don't know anything about it, and they said, "Well, you soon will," and I did. So then we did area by area, and I was eventually called the mother of the Darabin Parklands, and I was on that committee for 37 years. And it was a wonderful learning experience, and I met such wonderful people, and the press were very good to us in those days.
Well, it's beautiful seeing how your family's life has played out and how your life has played out in this beautiful book. And I think you mentioned it earlier, but what does it feel like to see this story come to life in print, to hold it in your hand?
Oh, it's just an amazing experience. I just wondered if it would ever happen, and I was just so happy with the cover and the fact that Kathy Lewis from Wild Dingo Press took on this project. It's taken a long time to find someone to take on the project and agree to publish it. It's just marvellous.
Well, your cousin, Tim Bonahady, who's a cultural historian, there's a line on the front of the book from him saying, an epic family history, a book of magical detail, and indeed it is. Sue Corse, thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Well, thank you, Laura. Thank you. That's been wonderful to do it.
On ABC Radio, it's Nightlife with Sarah McDonald.